comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Kevin Smith Show. As you can tell, we're having a little bit of cockpit difficulty here this evening, but we got it. We've got it straight now. How are you doing? Whoever you are and from wherever you hail, welcome. I'm glad you're here. The Kevin Smith Show is here because you have a right to know and because you matter. Because you have a right to know and because you matter, we do things from time to time that are a little bit above and beyond. Of course, we publish the K-Files, and the K-Files is always there, always available, free. And so if you're not subscribed, be sure you do subscribe because it's a good publication. And it'll help you to remain informed about what's going on in our genre, but also it'll help you to remain informed about what's going on here at the show. But it's always free, and I encourage you to get over to the website and subscribe if you have not yet done so. Also, we do other things that... are not, you know, it's not the same thing each time. In other words, how can I say this? The K-Files is published every 2 weeks. So every 2 weeks, the K-Files comes out, and it's always got new stuff in it. That's true. But you know that it's coming every 2 weeks. But we have unscheduled stuff. That's the way to say it. We have some unscheduled stuff that is... we throw it in from time to time, and we've got one of those coming up. Seminar Saturday is coming up, and you're asking yourself, what is Seminar Saturday? Well, Seminar Saturday is where we are going to some of the seminars that I have done in the past. We're going to air those again. Now, here's what's coming on Seminar Saturday. Mars, God's in the Garden, and Angels, Nephilim, and Anunnaki. What in the world are all of those? Well, Mars, actually it's Mars, the Fading Fog, and then Angels, Nephilim, and Anunnaki. Of course, you know what Mars, the Fading Fog is. That's a dynamic seminar. Angels, Nephilim, and Anunnaki, Gods in the Garden. Well, Gods in the Garden is all about what is actually said as opposed to what religionists tell you is said in Genesis regarding the origins of Earth and the origins of life. It is not religious. I'll tell you about the other one on the other side of this break. We have a break taking over. And that's going to be pretty exciting stuff. All right, we'll be back right after this.
The Kevin Smith Show is from independent artists. Most of it from independent artists at musicalley.com. Go over to musicalley.com. Check out thousands of artists and thousands of great independent tunes. MusicAlley.com.
How many miles can an eagle fly? Measure the joy in a child's eye. And how many prayers in a rosary bowl?
dancing stream. How many golden leaves will fall? What is the greatest gift of all? I remember the day your name was told. I begged the future to unfold. And I wish that you could imagine how much I will love you when we're old. Well, I wish that you could imagine how much I will love you when we're old. To burn.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. All right, let me finish up with Seminar Saturday, and then we'll bring our guest on. What will happen will be that not this coming Saturday, but the next one, 1 week away, all right? 1 week from this coming Saturday will be Seminar Saturday. It'll be the first Saturday that we've done this. So what is it? Well, what it is we will be doing Mars, the Fading Fog, that seminar. We'll be doing Gods in the Garden, that seminar, and we'll be doing Angels, Nephilim, and Anunnaki, that seminar. And they will play twice. So the reason they will play twice is because of the various time zones around the world. If you miss it the first go around, you can catch it the next go around, all on that same Saturday. But Gods in the Garden is not religious, but it is a look at the actual words that are absolutely published in Genesis, what it really says, not what do the theologians and religionists tell you it says. You're not stupid. You've got eyes. You can read, but I guarantee you most don't when it comes to anything that's in the Bible. Most people don't read it, and they assume that everything they've heard the religionists say is what's in that book, and therefore it sounds like nonsense to them, and they're not going to believe it. Well, that's a pretty ignorant approach. But you'll get an insight into what it actually says. And I'll tell you, it reads better than a Star Wars script. Then Angels, Nephilim, and Anunnaki, again, not religious, but a lot of people are throwing around a lot of information about Anunnaki and Nephilim, and it's in our genre. I mean, there's books out there in our genre about the Nephilim this and the Nephilim that. And so far, I haven't seen one that matches what's actually printed, published in the book where we even know about Nephilim. And so that seminar discusses these off-world beings based on what is said in the text where we even find out about them. And again, most people never read those texts. They just go with what their Sunday school teacher told them. And so it's not an attack on the Bible. I got told more than once that, you know, I'd burn in hell for my attack on the Bible. It's not an attack on the Bible. I can't see how it's an attack to say, why don't we just read it and see what it actually says? And again, it reads better than a Star Wars script. It will blow your freaking mind. It will blow your mind. So we're going to do those. If you're a member, you're going to get a special notice in your inbox in the members community about it. But if you're not a member, you still will be able to participate in that. The ticket is $10. You're going to get right at 6 hours of seminars and for 10 bucks. And these are really, really power-packed seminars. Every one of them will blow you away. All right, my guest this evening is Robert McDonald. Now, Robert McDonald was with us not too long ago and told us about an event that's coming up. The event is a paranormal investigation of the Normandy Beach. And he told us some pretty spectacular things about paranormal events that happen on the Normandy Beach, on the beaches of Normandy. And, you know, that's where the D-Day invasion took place. And he told us some really interesting and I would say fairly spectacular accounts of paranormal activity. Well, ladies and gentlemen, he is back with us this evening. And because he was experiencing some technical difficulties, I have not been able to check with him to see if our other guests are with us. Robert, are you hooked up? Are you with us this evening?
Yes, I am, Kevin. I guess we'll have to wait for the first one of your breaks to add the other my friends.
Okay.
I have some great guests from Scotland.
From Scotland. Okay.
This should prove interesting.
Well, yeah, and technologically, it's already proven interesting because not only have you been experiencing some problems, we were experiencing some problems here and caused some weird stuff to happen here. But, I mean, it's not outside attacks. It's just weird stuff decided not to work at precisely the most inopportune time.
It always happens, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. I said this not too long ago. You know, I can use the equipment all day, every day. Mm-hmm. And I do because I use it to produce video. I use it to produce recordings. It's busy equipment. It's going all the time. All right. And everything works fine all day long. And then if something is going to decide to not work, that will happen right when you push the button to go on the air.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, all you can do is hold your breath. Plan for the best and hold your breath. That's the best you can do on a night like this.
That's it. And some nights you just have to grab your ankles, you know?
I'm still surprised we can do this stuff at all. I mean, when I was a kid, this was all Star Trek fantasy. I mean, just sit here and talk to you over there like this and see the screen at the same time, watch your show, watch your TV. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm still stunned on cell phones that I don't know how to operate.
Yeah. Speaking of seeing, did you intend for us to have video this evening?
Yeah. That'll be on the next run.
Okay.
I intended for it, but evidently, well, you see.
Yeah. All right. So for the people that missed that previous show, give us a thumbnail sketch real quick of this. What is this event that's coming up? I think you call it the Normandy Adventure.
Yeah, that's what we're calling it. It's the first time that we managed to put paranormal group, ghost hunters, and UFO hunters, well, pretty much everybody together at one location for one event. And it's a first, and we have Guinness's World Book paying attention, and we have, well, quite a few people paying attention, actually. And I'm still hoping it works. I helped organize it, and we're going to be hunting 250 bunkers in France coming up on the 4th, 5th, and 6th. And it's a public event, totally public event, public venue, open venue. We're allowing anybody to come who wants to come. It costs absolutely nothing. You just have to like what you're doing.
I mean, there's no entry fee or anything. You just pay your own expenses to get there. And
well, you get yourself there. It's not hard. You go to Calais, then you look up at Adding in France. You're there. There's only one museum in town. There's only one campground, and we'll be at the campground. That's our meeting point. And from there, I'll show everybody all the giant bunkers. Now, these are super bunkers. Some are almost 5 stories tall.
Yeah. And so this event is for paranormal investigators and anybody to participate.
Anybody. We have
but it's a paranormal investigation of the area, right?
Right. There'll be inside. Well, that's indoors, outdoors as well. We'll be on the beach as well as inside the super bunkers and the forest. The haunted forest, and there's UFOs hunters coming as well to hit the beaches, and we'll be on the beaches as well with a candlelight visual, giving our thanks to the troops, and we're hoping to have as many teams as possible coming from around the world. You know, I always have high expectations, but they're confirming left and right that they are coming, and it's getting exciting now. We have under 10 days before the first day of the event, so
would it surprise you? Would it surprise you to know that after you were with us, what was it, a week ago?
Mm-hmm.
Or, I don't know, a week, 2 weeks? But recently you were with us. After that, I have received messages on my Facebook page from a neighbor of yours, someone who knows you, and we're not going to mention names. Let's don't mention names. No, telling me that he has warned you that this is going to be very dangerous and ask you not to go there.
I have received warnings not only from him. I have heard warnings from many, many people. And it can be quite a scary place. But these are professional ghost hunting teams that have been invited to go.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, they should know what they're doing, I suppose. We will be going.
What he told me is that the sounds of battle that people have heard there are real, and by real he means it's genuine. It's not figments of their imagination, and that there is in another dimension or another realm, there is battle going on there, and that you guys may get caught up into it.
Well, you know, I've heard this at from ghost hunters who have been into Gettysburg. I've heard this from ghost hunters who have been to many different locations around the world about the hearing fighting, hearing the battles. You do hear things in the distance. Now, we are north from the main attack field, the area we're in Adelang. The town was hit 4 days before D-Day. They were trying to get the bunkers first to survive everything else. 250 bunkers is a lot of bunkers. They obviously thought the invasion would take place directly on their heads. So these bunkers were built. And we were smart enough, I guess smart enough, to go down south with the battle. Now, there are new things I've learned recently because I have been receiving quite a few emails and messages on the area with questions, some from your viewers, which I really admire. Kevin, I really enjoy it when the viewers get involved. I had somebody ask me an interesting question recently. How come they carpet bomb the area, which is very true. I did a radio show recently with a colonel, a retired historian, a colonel from the U.S. Army. And yeah, he said absolutely. They carpet bombed the entire Normandy area the day of the invasion, just constantly bombing it with every munitions they had. And for the 1 mile thick, 150-mile-long corridor, they just dropped everything known. More bombs were dropped in that area in one day than they had dropped during the entire war, which I found amazing when you consider all the cities that were destroyed. The only uniqueness, I said, what's unique about that? I mean, this is public knowledge. Everybody knows this. What's unique about it? Almost every single bunker is still standing. That part I found unique.
So they didn't make direct hits on all those bunkers they were trying to take out.
They didn't make a direct hit on almost anything. And that's why the 8,000 Americans died in the 8 hours. Well, it was interesting hearing that from a colonel and a historian. You know, why did so many people die on the Normandy beaches when they shouldn't have done, the Americans? It's just it's amazing when you drop all those munitions, just the removal of the oxygen, there shouldn't have been anybody fighting back. And I'm sure America wanted to do everything they could to kill that beach outright. So they were firing from the gunboats as well as the airplanes. The carpet bombing, they fired from the gunboats at sea. And those gunboats, if you know, they can do 10 miles inland pinpoint accuracy from the ocean. So it's amazing nobody hit anything. It just makes one think. We were talking last week, so in case your listeners didn't know, you mentioned the idea that possibly a device was left on from World War II, you know, a secret Nazi device. Okay, that's an interesting theory. I had never considered it until you brought it up, but now when I think about it, the entire Normandy coast had this situation, not just the particular bunker for which I'm heading for.
You know, I thought about that too since we talked the other day. A couple of days ago, when I called to make sure we were still on track for tonight, I've thought about it since then. You mentioned it then, and I've thought about it since then. You know, when we say a Nazi device, we have to allow for this. There are lots of reports and pretty good documentation of the upper echelon of the Nazi party being very, very involved in occult societies. And if not personally involved in terms of like being a member of one of these societies, almost all of the top officers of the Nazi party were dealing daily with information based on information coming out of those occult societies. And so I know you and I have talked about, you know, the stories of Nazi UFOs. In the last show, we talked about that a little bit. Well, when we say it's a Nazi UFO, we have to remember that the stories are that while the Nazis may be the ones who physically built it, it was built based on technology they got from, based on technological information they got from principally the Thule Society. And they were channeling information from beings, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't it in Aldebaran, on that planet? So, you know, now whether people believe or disbelieve or don't know what to think about, you know, whether that information could even be real, let's say it is. Let's say that they actually were getting real technological help by means of this channeled information from extraterrestrials. That would mean, if they actually then built it, that you are dealing with technology that, while produced and manufactured on Earth, has its origins with extraterrestrials and would perhaps have the ability to still be running.
Yeah, I spoke to some people. You know, when you consider the bunkers we're approaching on the 4th, it's pretty close to the ocean, within walking distance. And even now, we've just come up with...
Hey, Robert, we have a break just about to take over, man. Let's break right there, and then we'll pick up right there with people you spoke to about this. All right, folks, we will be back right after this.
Thank you. truth in your eyes. You never fooled me at all. You only fooled yourself. You spend my money like you got it made. You never had one bit of fame. I still love you, but you treat me wrong. So I pick up my guitar. Vegas to play some cards. You lost my money, you lost my car. Had to flirt your way back to LA. You only made it half of the way. I should feel sorry, but I really don't. You think I'll come get you, but this time I won't. I still love you, but you treat me wrong. So I pick up my guitar.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. It appears that things are beginning to work now, and I've been able to swap channels on some stuff, and it's things that are normally no problem at all that were a little bit of a problem at the beginning of the show now are working again. So I am pleased. My guest this evening, Robert McDonald. And Robert, as we went away for break, you were about to say something about you'd been talking to some people about something, and you were going to tell us what it is they had told you.
Right, I was tracking down all the modern technology there could have been for that era, 1942, all the way till today, that could keep a device running on an indefinite level. Outside of nuclear, nothing. To keep it running for 65 years, there's nothing they can come up with. But remember, he added to this, he said, but remember, in Norway, Hitler was working with nuclear fission, nuclear weapons, and heavy water. He was making heavy water in Norway and collecting it and transporting it for something. Most people assume it was a nuclear weapon, but, I mean, nobody's really sure to this day, are we? However, nuclear fusion would make this thing run indefinitely forever for thousands of years. And interesting they said that, because you can say a device is running, and Hitler was leap years in technology ahead of everyone else in all directions, everything you can think of. His tanks were better, just his guns were better, everything he had was better. It just makes one think. Really does.
And that's just the technology that we are aware of. If they were getting, if they were getting technological help from off planet, as so many people have rumored, and I don't know whether they were, I'm not saying they were, but if they were, then it could be something not nuclear, but something else that we just don't even know about.
Right. And if it wasn't a device that's left running, then it's strictly paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
So, once again, this adventure is good for all sides, whether it's in the sky or what do you call third dimensions or ghostly images. This is the perfect event.
I believe you have connected with another guest. Is that correct?
Right. The Paranormal Knights of Scotland. They're my neighbors over here. You there, Andrew?
I'm here.
Okay. Say hello.
Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Andrew. So, Andrew, tell us about the Paranormal Knights of Scotland. What is that?
Paranormal Knights of Scotland is a paranormal team. They're a research team that research spirits. They do events. They do paranormal tour events. This one's been set up by me and Robert. We have an international paranormal event.
Had you... before this event was organized, had you or your group ever considered going to Normandy and checking out the paranormal activity on the beaches there?
I've been considering it for years. There's a lot of other places I've been considering. This is the first international paranormal event we've organized. It's a global phenomenon.
So you had heard these stories about the paranormal activity, right?
Yes, I heard some of the stories, but Robert's fault was in with some other stories around paranormal activities, especially Bunker 4.
You know, I have to admit, which actually I did in the previous show that we did about this, I had not heard of paranormal activity taking place on the beaches of Normandy. And then Robert came on and talked to us about this event and told some of the stories. I had not heard any of that previously. And I was pretty amazed. And of the paranormal events or paranormal stories that you have heard about the Normandy beach, which one is like the most interesting and the most spectacular to you?
Most interesting and spectacular, I'd say, would be Bunker 4. We've heard most of the stories about it for Robert, and I think that's the most intriguing place. I'd love to go there first.
You know, the thing that in that last show that we did with Robert that really interested me was... while he was there, there were these sounds of a tank out, you know, rumbling around. And
yeah, he said that would be interesting. That'd be an interesting thing to go and document. It'd be good to get that one EVP.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think is the deal here, Andrew? I mean, do you think that this is paranormal activity, or do you think this is real, tangible battle taking place in another dimension that seems to be sort of bleeding over into our dimension? What do you think?
It's a very interesting and possible explanation. But, as I say, we have to come in and do an investigation to find out the actual truth behind it. That'd be the only thing I could say to you from that point.
What I'm actually looking forward to, Kevin, is the thermal imagers that people can bring. You can actually see cold and dark images moving. And this is probably going to be the most interesting thing, because when you hear a noise... For example, a tank battle or a gun firing or what have you, you can point the imager in that direction and actually capture some nice photographs and videos at the same moment.
Andrew, how many people are part of your group?
At the moment, there's 12. There's five of the team coming to the beach, Aldenheim.
Are you going to be bringing equipment with you?
Yes, we'll bring equipment. We'll bring specialist equipment on hand to paranormal investigators.
I would say it's probably a good thing you're not coming from the USA with equipment. We have to get patted down and inspected and body cavity searched and all that stuff just to get on an airplane now.
And we've contacted the local government, and they've explained as long as we declare our equipment, everything should be fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, here it has become somewhat of a joke. I've thought about starting a new airline here and calling it Bohica Airlines. Have you ever heard of Bohica?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Bohica. That stands for bend over. Here it comes again. Bohica Airlines. Okay, so you guys are going to get on airplanes, or are you going by boat? I mean, how's this going to work?
He's a good swimmer.
It would be easier for us to get a coach. So a 15-hour drive, I think it is, in the bus. And that takes us straight to the port of Calais.
Oh, so you'll be going by bus?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Wouldn't be the first time.
And how long will that take you?
15 hours.
Yeah, that's a pretty long travel.
Well, we've been hearing a bit of stories of the beach and the bunkers. It would be well worth coming to Billet. It's definitely worth it.
So, you got five of your members coming. I would assume that these five are as intensely interested in the paranormal stories of paranormal activity in Normandy as you are.
Oh yes, definitely.
So what is it that you guys hope to find? I mean, what do you hope to discover there?
We'll be happy to document activity. We'll be happy to 100% sure of activity on the beach and inside bunker. We'd love to do Bunker 4.
Mm-hmm.
Stories I've heard are amazing for Bunker 4. As Robert's probably told you, there's 250 bunkers that we're trying to cover within the space of 3 days as well.
Yeah, there's 250 bunkers we have to do in the two-day period, but Bunker 4 is the most fascinating. It's the one with the most paranormal activity.
So, what happens, let me ask you this. Are you bringing any equipment that does thermal imaging?
Are you still there, Andy?
Sorry, can you repeat our last question?
Yeah, are you bringing any equipment that enables you to do thermal imaging?
No, our thermal imagers are actually broken, but we'll be bringing different kinds of equipment, like infrared thermometers. We're bringing night vision cameras with us as well.
Mm-hmm.
Digital recorders to pick up EVPs, electrical magnetic field detectors, the smallest equipment we can get to hand. Because most of our other equipment, it's all electricity. And as you say, we'll be working in the bunkers where there's no electricity.
We have some friends from Ghost Hunters Netherlands who will be bringing the heavier equipment.
Okay, so with your night vision equipment, what happens if you hear the sounds of tanks and you hear the sounds of gunfire, you look in that direction, and bang, there it is. You see it happening. Is this equipment capable of shooting some video of that?
Yeah, it's capable. Yes, night vision, and it can take photographs, small photographs from it as well. And plus, our own cameras can do that at night, mm-hmm. our normal still cameras. And the reason you haven't heard very much about any of this stuff, it's never been done. We're the first ones to actually publicly ghost hunt the beaches and the D-Day area. And we're hoping this is only the start. So we picked a light, I call it the light job. The heavy job comes on the next event. But this is a first. So first for anybody. So it's going to be unique.
Andrew, is it possible? I mean, how long have you personally been doing paranormal investigation?
Yeah, roughly around 8 years, but the team's been going for about 14 years.
Okay, but you've been doing it for how long?
8 years.
8 years.
Yeah.
Have you run across anything that really sort of spooked you?
Many things.
So what do you think you'd be spooked if you saw the battle going on?
That's hard to say. I've never really seen evidence to say there is paranormal teams out there that say a ghost exists, but there's not really anything to go by to say ghosts really do exist. That's why paranormal teams exist, to try and prove or disprove the existence of spirit.
So
that's pretty much how I follow it, Kevin. It's like, is it ghost or is it other worlds bleeding in onto ours? Is it sand holding memory? We spoke of that on the last show, remember?
Yeah.
And that's the main thing, reason I enjoy this so much is answering the questions and investigating the questions. What is it?
I had never considered or thought about sand holding memory. But it is crystal, of course. And, since you were with us before and we talked about that, I've run across some stories from South America and even a couple of stories in southern Texas where people have seen conquistadors.
Right.
And, and then they just vanish, They are conquistadores, and they are on their horses, and they've got their armor on, and then they just vanish. They just vaporize and disappear. Maybe it is sand. Maybe it is.
Yeah, just doing a quick replay. Nature doing a replay on an old image.
All right, we have to take a break, guys. We'll be back, folks, right after this break, so don't go away.
Thank you.
Right. Welcome back. And everything was working fine, and then it just decided on the radio side not to listen to the mic. Now it's working again. We're good to go. All right, so we're listening to some pretty interesting individuals here this evening, because they are about to do something that is pretty interesting, and that is they are about to do a paranormal investigation of the beaches of Normandy, and specifically, I think, focused around what is known as Bunker 4. We're hearing from Robert MacDonald, who is in the Netherlands, and live with us, and Andrew Park, who is in Scotland, live with us. And, gentlemen, I didn't say this earlier, but let me say it now. I really, really appreciate the fact that you both were willing to be up so early. You had to be up at 4 in the morning to do this show, and I appreciate you doing it.
I had to be up at 4. Andrew had to be up at 3.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Andrew.
Yeah, because the one-hour difference between Scotland and Netherlands.
I would have been getting up in an hour anyway. How about you, Andrew?
That was well worth it.
Andrew, how did you hear about this event? How did you come to know about this opportunity to go investigate the Normandy beach?
Well, I was talking to Robert a couple months back about being an international paranormal investigation, and we just happened to come up with the Normandy for the D-Day, so it's come up towards D-Day, so I thought we'll do something in about the D-Day event.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the friend doing it in the French land. But we mainly did it to promote the paranormal. I was told years ago that paranormal teams could never work together. And this is to prove that paranormal teams can work together in perfect harmony. And not just small paranormal teams, this is international paranormal teams all over the world. We extend our hand of friendship.
Why do you think there is that you just mentioned that, you know, a lot of people, you know, have said that paranormal teams can't work together. Why do you think that exists? That's kind of paranormal in itself, isn't it?
It's odd and wild. There's just so much trouble between different teams. I can't get into it in detail, but there's just so much trouble between teams.
And I think it's
a sad thing to think about. You know, they're all after the same thing. I don't understand why they're fighting and the arguing and all the stuff about paranormal teams trying to bury each other. We're all there for the same thing. We're there to prove or disprove the possibility of spirit.
I have said of UFOs, but it applies also to paranormal teams. I've said about UFO researchers and investigators that, you know, they eat their own. And
That's that situation.
Yeah, and it does apply in a lot of cases to paranormal teams too. And I don't know why it's that way, but you know, well, I think one of the things is ego, and
right, exactly.
You know, you've
got it.
Absolutely,
you hit the nail on the head there. Definitely ego. That's how I put it down, ego.
Well, and, you know, we, unfortunately, and let me say this to our listeners, you and I, as people who are watching the UFO investigators and watching the paranormal investigators, and we're interested in their work, we, in a way, we feed that. We sort of feed that because we gravitate to someone, we as an audience, we gravitate to someone who rides out front as the crusader, the knight in shining armor, who's going to protect us from all the frauds out there. Horse Pucky. There's not anybody out there that's going to protect you from all the frauds. There will always be frauds, even frauds among those who are going to protect you from frauds. And so, but that sort of human tendency to gravitate towards the Crusader sort of feeds that thing about, you know, the UFO investigators eating their own and the paranormal investigators eating their own. It gives some currency to the guy that's going to be a Crusader, you know. All right, let's go back to Normandy. When will your team be arriving at Normandy?
Me or
no, Andrew.
Okay.
Our team should be there on the 4th, Kevin.
Yeah, when will your team be arriving there?
We should be there for about 3:10 in the afternoon.
And you're going to stay for how long?
We'll be there till the 9th.
Uh-huh. Now, this event is 4th, 5th, and 6th, right, Robert?
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. The 4th, 5th, and 6th. However, I imagine a lot of the teams, if it's really, this is the planned dates, but if it's really, really, really active, I imagine everyone's going to want to hang out a bit and see what's there. So you leave a doorway open so you can hang out a little longer with your friends in the campground and, yeah, continue.
Okay, so here's the question I have regarding that. You have, Robert, you have gotten clearance from the authorities there to do this on the 4th, 5th, and 6th. They've taken down fences, or they are taking down fences and barriers and making it accessible to people participating in this event. So that's 4th, 5th, and 6th. But, Andrew, your group is going to stay until the 9th. Robert, will the fences be going back up immediately after this event, and will these places then be inaccessible to folks like Andrew and the Knights of Scotland?
Well, most all of it is accessible to the public, with the exception of two locations, which I'm going to surprise everybody with when we're there.
Okay.
The two locations, the fence have gone down, and they will go back up on the 7th, the morning of the 7th, they'll replace the fences.
So those places will need to be investigated. The 4th, 5th, and 6th, or the opportunity will be gone.
Right, that's correct. And that is permanent. That will be forever.
Wow. So it's a one-time deal.
Right. They've never had anybody in. They did a quick bomb sweep to make sure there was nothing was mined or sabotaged in there by the Germans, because it's been 65 years since anyone entered two bunkers. Absolutely 65 years. So they put the fence up in 1946 at the end of the war and left it up. And they've replaced it twice, three times, but nobody's been inside the bunkers. There's iron doors, and they're going to actually remove the iron doors, go inside and make sure the bunkers are clear. And I'm surprising Andrew and all the listeners right now that are going to the event. I'm actually throwing a surprise on them. But this is what's happening now. And it's being done by the French government.
Andrew, what is your background? I mean, what do you do when you're not doing paranormal investigation?
Well, I'm an events organize events.
And the five who are coming with you to Normandy, what are their backgrounds?
Yeah, they all work. They're different jobs. One of them's a care assistant. He works in a care home. That's my dad. He's cornered a paranormal team.
Okay.
He's here just now.
What do the others do?
The other one's a care assistant as well.
Did I hear you correct, Andrew? You said your dad's with you now?
My dad's here, sitting quiet.
Oh, wake him up. Tell him to say hello.
Hi, Robert. Hi, Kevin.
Hello. Good morning.
Started it all, Kevin.
Yeah. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
So, what about you? And let me not, Andrew, tell us what is your father's name?
My father's name's David.
David. Okay. What about you, David? Are you pretty excited about this event?
I'm over the moon about this. This is a chance in a lifetime.
What do you hope to achieve out of this?
Bring back recorded results of what we find and get together with paranormal groups all over the world. It'd be amazing.
What if what you find is all quiet?
Then we'll put up nothing. You know, there's nothing there. There's nothing there.
I don't see how that can happen.
Okay. Now, I have lived and worked in areas where there has been carpet bombing. Granted, it was much more recent carpet bombing. One area I was in that area a few months after the carpet bombing. And, you know, the thing is, not all of that stuff blows up. And so you have stuff laying around, unexploded ordnance laying around. And one of the things that people think is, well, it's been 65 years, that stuff's not dangerous now. The opposite is true. And we'll pick up there when we come back from this break. Don't go away, folks. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guests this evening, Robert MacDonald, Andrew, and David. Andrew and David from Scotland, Robert originally from the United States, but currently living in the Netherlands. And so they are live from across the planet. And I was saying about carpet bombing, the unexploded ordnance doesn't just rot away like an apple. What it does, what rots away are its safety features, and it becomes more dangerous. It becomes potentially more volatile with time. Andrew and David, any concerns on your part about walking up on something that did not explode when it was intended to and has been laying there all this time?
Well, that is a bit of a worry, but as Robert says, that as long as we stay in the paths, we'll be okay. Don't wander. Stay in the paths.
Yeah, and that's important to do. It is important to do. You know, when I was in Bosnia after the Bosnian War, we were instructed to make sure we stayed on the anything that was paved. Mm-hmm. And because they had not completed doing all the demining and everything. And while I was there, an 11-year-old boy took off running across a park, and a city park, mm-hmm. and stepped on a mine and blew his leg off. Yeah. So it is. It's very important. If they tell you stay on the path, you better stay on the path.
Yeah, these bomb, what do you call it, disposal people in France have been working since the war ended, 1945, and every year they move countless hundreds of bombs. I mean, some as much as one ton, mm-hmm. and some as small as a hand grenade, and it's going on every single day. That's one thing. When I try to debunk in ghost hunting, I've been to this particular bunker before. When you're at the campground, you can hear explosions in the distance. Well, that can be easily debunked as a tractor running over one of these grenades. Usually when they're plowing a field, they run across them. The local museum, when I was there last, had a box of live mortar rounds from the Germans. So I was pretty impressed by the mortar rounds they found, and this is around the bunker area. Uh-huh. So, and this is an everyday thing for them. You have to remember, more ordnance were either planted on the ground and dropped from the skies and shot from ships than any location on Earth per square foot. And this is just one little beach, if you can imagine.
Well, let's talk about, because I know we have some listeners right now who did not hear the previous show. So let's talk about, just for a moment, Robert, the story. You said, you know, that you heard the sounds of battle, and the windows were rattling, and you actually got recordings of that.
Right. A friend of mine who works for what they call the gendarme, or the police, called me up, and he said they have a problem, and he heard I'm into this paranormal type stuff. And while he was talking to me, I could hear what sounded like gunfire, heavy guns. And I asked him what was going on, because I'm not sure what he was talking about. He said, well, you hear the windows rattling. I said, yeah. He said, it sounds to us like a tank battle. Could you come out here and help us with this one? Paranormally, you know, we're going to try to use a helicopter. We're going to do everything we can to track down if it's a prankster who's doing this or what's going on, because it's scaring the tourists. So I took about 10 friends and placed them on the hillsides, and I went down to the beaches with my friends. We cut in half. While I was walking the beaches, it sounded just exactly what he described, the engine noise of a tank. I couldn't, of course, define what engine noise that was. I've never heard a Tiger tank running other than a movie. So to hear one in person on the beach, you know, it's pretty loud, but even in the distance, but you don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. I couldn't identify the noise, but it did sound like a tank of some type. The helicopter kept insisting there was nothing out there on the thermals, so there's no hot engines anywhere. So we started walking the beach, and as the tide was going out, so our timing was pretty lucky. And then we saw about a 9-foot long pair of tracks from a tank sucked into the sand. It looked like it was running along the beach, but that's all we saw. All the way around for at least 200 yards in all directions of the beach was just those set of tracks. There's no way to explain how they got there. Mm-hmm. So that's why we enjoy this paranormal stuff, you know, to try to come up with answers for people.
So you were actually contacted by a French police officer and asked to come out and check this.
Yeah, he's a friend of mine. It has been for about 20 years. And he knows nothing at all about the paranormal. And if they do, they're not going to admit it. Yeah. And he asked if I'd come help them out. So I said, sure, me and my friends.
Let me ask Andrew and David, did you know about this, about the gendarme who asked?
No, I didn't know, no. This is new.
Yeah. That's pretty significant for any policeman to step out and ask for a paranormal investigator to come out and check something. That's pretty significant.
I think he was asking me as a friend what I thought of it, because he knew I was into this. I still have no answers. I can't. Mm-hmm. We took, like I said, plaster casts of the tracks. If they got there by a truck or somebody playing a joke, of course, it'd be huge tracks. If they were there by a boat, well, the boat could never get away in time, because the tide was just going out and there was the tracks. Mm-hmm. This is one of those, I call it the weirdo moment. You really don't know what to say. You know, you take a plaster cast, you take it to the nearest place to be identified, and, it turned out to be a tiger tank, which is a German tank. But there's no explaining how that got there.
I wonder how many tiger tanks, working tiger tanks, may still be in existence.
That I wouldn't know. I think they have at least, I really wouldn't know. I know they imported them from Germany for the movie they did there at Normandy Beach with Tom Hanks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they did that in England, the UK. They imported quite a few of them from Germany to England, or Ireland, I think it was the coast of Ireland, to do the D-Day scene.
Well, I have not heard a tiger tank. I've heard American tanks. But it's the ones we use now, and they are loud, you would be able to hear. You know, it's a low frequency sound, and you should be able to hear it for some distance if it's running.
It killed my one theory that I had. You know, sand can hold memory. I mean, as far as the tanks, what was going on the Normandy beach that evening, because. Of course, an image doesn't leave tracks in the beach, in the sand. So that's it blows out one theory, but it opens up a whole new kettle of worms. I mean, what did it? What made the tracks? Of course, a tank is not a ghost, correct? It doesn't have a soul. It's a machine. So it's one of those, weird moments.
Yeah, but the replays of battles, for instance, Civil War battles, they hear cannons firing. Mm-hmm. And by replays, I don't mean reenactment. I mean, you know, the sort of paranormal thing happening. People hear the sound of gunfire and they hear the sound of cannons being fired. And, you know, the... certainly, guns and cannon do not have spirit. They do not have soul. And yet, people hear them.
Andrew and David there are in the most haunted country on Earth, Scotland, with the most paranormal activity in the whole world. It's well known. Guys, have you heard any battles over there in Scotland that you can speak of?
No, apart from Glencoe, there's supposed to be a lot of activity up there at a certain date when the slaughter happened.
On a particular date. Okay.
And these battles in Scotland, do they generate... I mean, do people hear the sound of the weapons?
Yes.
So, you see, Robert, it may not necessarily negate that being paranormal.
Well, they hear the sound of the weapons, but there's nothing out there. You know, that's where it hits the paranormal. I mean, for a lack of another term for this particular type of event. When you hear a battle like they did in Gettysburg, like you do over in Glen Cove, you hear a battle taking place and there's nothing there. That's when it hits the paranormal. Are you hearing a replay? Are you seeing the, is it hard, what do you call it, hard light images that are making tracks in the sand? What are we experiencing here? It's a huge question mark, which is why we're looking forward to doing the first event. We're starting in the very north of the D-Day area, and we're eventually going to have more and more of these events and head south. Not necessarily on D-Day, but slowly head south all the way to Point Du Hoc, where the Americans hit the beach. Then we would have covered what we would have done in paranormal, what nobody had done before, which is taking multiple groups and covering the entire Normandy beach.
All right, I want to invite the audience to join with us in this conversation. And for those of you who have just joined us now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're talking with Robert McDonald from the Netherlands, or he's in the Netherlands. And we're talking to Andrew Parks and David Parks in Scotland. And we're talking about the upcoming investigation, paranormal investigation, of the Normandy beach and some weird stuff happening over there. In order to join the conversation with your questions or comments, give us a telephone call at 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. And if you are outside of the USA and outside of Canada, you can either call that number or use our flash message feature, and you'll see the flash message link on my website. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Kevin from Sacramento.
Okay, you kind of broke up a little bit. This is Kevin from where?
This is Kevin from Sacramento.
Hello, Kevin. What is your question or comment?
Hey, well, I had a comment, actually. I was, when he said this, I was, timelines came to mind. What if there's two timelines that are close together, so close together, they're like merging or something like that? I don't know. You can.
Okay, so let me make sure I understand what your idea is. That there's two timelines that are essentially colliding, but they're not exactly matched up. And so the battle at Normandy is still going on in the other timeline. Is that it?
Or maybe it's another battle,
a
newer one, and on timeline two, say, there is actually a war going on right now. And on this timeline that we're talking on right now, there's not. And maybe they're coming close, and you can hear the sounds and get some faint. Yeah, maybe that could explain some ghost situations, too. I don't know.
What do you think, Robert?
That's a new one. I really don't know. That one's got me. I mean, double timelines. That's what I try to teach people.
I was listening to a couple of people talk about timelines and how they got machines that, I don't know, that they can see these timelines on, and one's a disastrous timeline and one's a good timeline. Maybe we're on the good one.
The sliders. Are you referring to sliders?
Pardon me?
Are you referring to sliders, being the military sliders? People sliding at
time. I think that has something to do with it. I'm not sure. It just popped in my mind. I thought I'd call in and throw that out there.
That's what I love about your show, Kevin.
Yeah.
You never know.
Kevin, let me ask you something, Kevin. Is this your first time to call us?
Yes, it is.
Well, don't let it be your last.
Okay, I will.
All right, thanks for the call. So, Andrew, What do you think of that idea, that it may be two timelines colliding out there?
Robert says it's new to me as well.
Would your investigators be able, you think, to determine if that is what's happening?
No.
Mm-hmm.
That's not their expertise.
Okay, to the telephone caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hi,
Brent.
I
have a question for all four of you.
Okay.
Since we don't know what the technology is in some of those bunkers, what is the possibility that it could have trapped those who died on Normandy Beach at the moment of death in an alternate dimension? And if you turn those things off, they reappear and are still fighting.
Ooh!
You explain to them that the war is over.
Ooh, now that's a good movie.
Now that's, I've never heard that. Wow.
So you turn the technology off and all of a sudden they reappear still fighting each other and there you stand naked in the breeze in the middle of
right.
it.
That's right.
That's a movie and
that's
a half,
good question.
Wow.
What's that, Ender?
That's a good question.
Yeah. Whoa.
Oh, man, that would be... Awesome. Brent, you ought to write that up as a movie script, man.
I'm serious. Skillsburg would jump all over that.
Sorry, not going to happen.
Wow.
That's what I love about your show, your guests, Kevin. Wow, they come up with some of the... It's amazing, your guests.
You know, Brent, you got a bent brain, man.
Twisted.
Yeah, but I mean, I mean that in a positive way. Now, I mean, really, I mean, I think you would agree. I think way outside the box most of the time, but that is a possibility I didn't even think about, didn't even consider.
Because the reason I brought it up is because we do not know what their technology was.
Yeah, we really don't.
We know it was more advanced than anybody else's. That's what we do know.
Yeah. Wow, man, can you imagine? Can you imagine, Robert and Andrew, what if what Brent just said is the case, and all of a sudden, somehow you do something that trips the switch and the technology right. turns off, and there you stand in the middle of the battle? What are you guys going to do then?
Fulfillment.
Well, lucky for me, I'm bringing a change of pants. Can't speak for Andrew and David.
Won't know he'll not.
I know what's going to happen when that, when some event like that takes place. I know exactly what's going to happen.
Run!
That's me. I've got my Nikes. I'm ready.
Yeah. Wow, Brent, that is that's an amazing thought.
I'm no one's hero. I'm not going to stare down the guns. You know that.
Brent,
I'll David in front. Go get them.
I'll tell you, I'll make you a deal, Brent. You write that up. I will get it into the hand. Just write the idea up and flesh it out as much as you can. I will put it into the hands of at least two filmmakers and see if they will do anything with it. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. I can't make any promises, but I can promise to get it into their hands. That would be one fantastic movie.
Yeah. Or a TV series. I mean, that I see that as a TV series of several hundred shows. Wow.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Anything else, Brent?
That would scare the heck out of me. I'll tell you that. If I was on the beach and that happened, I'm out of there. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I can guarantee you, they say white men can't jump. You would see one.
They don't know what I mean.
Oh, that's right.
I'd put kangaroos to shame, man. I'd be hopping out of there.
They ask me what's going to happen when I see this two-story tall ghost inside the bunker staring at me that's not in the Nazi outfit. I said, you're going to see backside and tennis shoes. That's all you're going to see of me. Dust trail heading back to the camp. How about
the
you?
Dust trail, that's it.
All right, Brent.
Luckily for us, we have a pub across the street from the camp, don't we, Andrew?
Okay, Brent, you got any more questions or comment?
No, that was it. It was enough.
Oh, yeah, well, it was a big one, and I thank you.
It was a wow.
Goodbye.
All right, bye. Wow, man.
That was kicks.
Yeah.
That's off the imagination of your guests. Really, the members of your show, Kevin, are just amazing.
They really are.
Really participate. This is great.
Yeah, people who listen to this show are real outside-the-box thinkers. Mostly. I mean, you have some folks who are like brand new to the show, mm-hmm. who are just beginning to sort of peek outside the box a little bit. But people that have been around for a while, you know, they know to think far and far afield, you know. So, yeah. Wow. All right, 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. There was a movie years ago, I don't know how, maybe as much as 10 years ago. I cannot remember the name of it, but I saw it twice, and I can't remember the name of it, where they found some kind of complex in Antarctica, and they went there and somehow activated it, and it started melting the ice cap and melting it rapidly, and what emerged was Atlantis. Do you remember that movie?
Yeah, I do, but I can't remember the name of it. I'm like you that way. Uh-huh. I just can't remember the name of it. I don't watch TV enough.
Andrew, have you seen that movie?
Oh, I hope not.
So this would be sort of something like that in reverse, where you're not activating the device, but deactivating it.
Right. Now that's so cool. You can do it in a number. Let's say each time you pull out a cell phone, start to make a call, you deactivate it.
Oh,
imagine,
man.
Imagine being in the middle of a war and just... Imagine the shock on someone's face. Their mouth drops open with a cell phone in their hand, just looking around while they're talking to their wife. Like, that would be a great scene.
This would
be a comedy or serious. This would be a great film.
And, you know, this would be like a mixture of, it would kind of be the Philadelphia experiment in reverse.
That would be cool.
Yeah. Things appearing. Man. I gotta see that movie. Somebody's gotta make it. I'll make a deal with the filmmaker that makes the movie. I'll write your music for you at a real discount. All right. I just want to see the movie made. Now, Robert, did you have other guests that you're going to be bringing on?
Only if they ring in. No.
Only if
no
they ring in.
To.
Okay.
I was hoping to hear from Ghost Hunter in the Netherlands. I would like to add them, but I don't see them around, so.
Okay. That's still pretty early in the morning.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We are just a few seconds away from a break, and so we'll step away for that break. When we come back, please call and share your thoughts about the possibilities. Weird stuff is happening, apparently. At Normandy beaches, you know, where the D-Day invasion took place, weird stuff is going on and has been going on now for decades. And we've got some paranormal investigators going over there. Here's your chance to talk to some of them. We'll be back right after this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking about the event that is coming up called Normandy Adventure. And this event is pretty spectacular all on its own. And that is a gathering of paranormal investigators from around the world at Normandy to do paranormal investigation of the site of D-Day, and where there are some rather spectacular reports coming out of there. The telephone lines are open, 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889 is the telephone number. And then, of course, those who are not in the USA and not in Canada have an additional option, and that option is to participate in the show via flash message, okay? And you just go over to my website. The website is kevinsmithshow.com, all one word, kevinsmithshow.com. Scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show. And right above that picture, you'll see the link that says Flash Message. And so if you're not in the USA, if you're not in Canada, you can use that. Otherwise, give us a call on the telephone, 623-444-5889. Andrew, we were talking about, with our last caller, a spectacular scenario that he pointed out as a possibility. If this thing were made into a movie, they would obviously need a bunch of paranormal investigators to be in the movie. Would you and your group do that?
Definitely.
Definitely.
Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, and then we could, if they made this movie, Robert, I would want to be in it too, simply because I was here when Brent talked about it. I'd be singing Ringo Starr's, "They're going to put me in the movies. They're going to make a big star out of me."
Wait, I never even considered that. And I usually, like I said, one of my groups is Paranormal 360, so I like to look in all 360, directions at one time on subjects. But, wow, that one never crossed my mind at all.
But, see, and this is a good lesson for all of us here. As open-minded as we think we are, and we are, but as open-minded as we think we are, there are many, many possibilities that we have never even considered.
That's what I love about what I do. I look at all possibilities, but I love your guests. I mean, the people that call in your show are just absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Some of the, they always give me some of the most wonderful ideas that I never would have come up with on my own.
Oh, man, I'm not kidding you. And Brent, I know you're still listening. I am not kidding, man. Write that up and email it to me so that I can put it in the hands of a couple of filmmakers that I know and just see what may happen. Somebody needs to turn that into a movie. What about, and let's talk about, you could make a movie with that. whether that's what actually happens out there or not, you could do a movie with that because that's a great plot for a movie.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
But what about documenting what actually happens out there? Are you going to get enough video of everything to turn it into a documentary that you could put online or that you could offer for sale? Or what? I mean, or is this just going to happen and then vanish away forever?
No, this will never vanish. We're going to keep pursuing it and pursuing it until we get enough video footage, until we get enough photographs, enough evidence. It would be a nice television show. I would give it to the Scots. You know, the Irish have had a paranormal TV show and everybody else has, but the Scots haven't had one yet.
Well, there you go.
You still, because they have the most haunted country in the world, and I think it's about time that a TV show just focuses in on one country. I think that'd be cool. Yeah.
So, Andrew, you may wind up as like the host of a paranormal television show, you know.
That would be great.
Yeah. And then whatever you do for your day job, you can quit, you know, and just go be rich.
Not for me.
Well, send this guy's short letter to over to Andrew.
Yeah.
That's a great idea he had. That's really cool.
It is. It is. You know, see, and it's not outside the realm of possibility.
No, and I think it's every paranormal person's dream to suddenly find themselves in the middle of a, I guess, for lack of another word, spook battle.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that would be a dream come true for any paranormal investigator. Well, I mean, that's why we're going.
I mentioned it may not be a spook battle. It may be a real battle, like Brent was talking about with right. This variation. Think about this. The stories about the Philadelphia experiment have the ship disappearing and reappearing somewhere else in a different time. You know, one of the stories about it is that they briefly were in 1983. That, you know, briefly they were in 1983. Well, they were real sailors. And that was a real ship, and they were really, if that happened, they were really transported to 1983, if that actually happened, okay? So all of a sudden, here are these guys that appear from nowhere in 1983, and what period of time were they living in reality? They were from World War II era.
Right.
So you could have, you know, one of the stories that's pretty persistent out there is that the Nazi technology was dabbling in time travel as well. So what if you've got their experiment from World War II that did the same thing as the Philadelphia experiment, and these guys appear... They're really in their time, and they're really alive, and they suddenly appear in our time while you're there on the beach. I mean, that could be.
Actually, that's one of the stories the colonel was talking to me about. In his opinion, there was no evidence at all that Hitler was trying to build a bomb. He was working with nuclear fusion, and they were trying to figure out why. Why was he working on nuclear fission if it wasn't a bomb?
Now, this is the retired U.S. colonel, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Correct. He's a historian now. But it's really, really a very, very valid question.
Yeah.
What was Hitler working on? Was he working on some sort of power source that would work forever? Which, of course, would be nuclear, which he would need the heavy water. He would need all the... you know, type equipment necessary to make a bomb, I suppose. I can only assume. To make, basically a power station. And when you look at the ballistic rockets and all the technology Hitler had long before he should have had it, it's just amazing to think about that he could have actually done that, created a nuclear power station that far in advance.
Yes.
And it could be running to this day. Think about it, the lifespan, minimum lifespan is, I think the minimum span is like 1,000 years.
Yeah, and it would depend on what his technology turned out to be. I mean, there are a lot of different ways that you can get nuclear power. There is the way that we do it, you know, and even there are variations of that. You know, there, for instance, the Russians have their way of building nuclear reactors. The French have their way. The Americans have their way, and so forth. And it's different technology, but still using the same basic nuclear idea. But it is possible that there is a different nuclear idea that you could use, a different process, and you would have an entirely different technology. But a nuclear power plant, ladies and gentlemen, just so you can grasp this, I know when we talk about nuclear, the Nazis and possibility of a nuclear power plant, you're thinking of these big monstrosities that you see setting out on the side of the hill out there that are generating power for a city. Don't think that way. You're thinking, you know, something huge and somebody would have discovered it by now. Don't think that way. Think of nuclear submarine or nuclear-powered aircraft carriers. They carry nuclear reactors on board, small enough that they can carry them on the submarine, small enough they can carry them on the aircraft carrier, and powerful enough that it can power, for instance, an aircraft carrier. An aircraft carrier these days is a small city. But the reactor
sit very comfortably in the bottom of a 5-story tall bunker.
Aha, there you go. What if he got there first?
He got there?
Yeah, what if he got there first before us? What if he,
right,
Hitler, got that technology?
Well, he was there before us because that's why we had the heavy water plant bombed in Norway. He was already ahead of America in that way. So he was ahead of everyone in that way. So who knows?
But I'm talking about in the small nuclear reactors.
Exactly.
What if he got there first?
Yeah, that's what I was referring to.
Uh huh. Because he certainly
was there.
He certainly got to guided missiles first.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, ballistic missiles. He was the first one to launch a cruise missile. So
yeah. And apparently. Now, this really goes out on the edge, but the Nazis apparently got to space first. If those stories are true.
Well, they had ballistic rockets that had to go into space when they ever, like, every time they launched on London, the rockets went into space, so they had the technology.
Yeah.
It's not like you say they didn't have it.
Uh-huh.
So they could have easily placed one man in a capsule.
All right, so now let's talk more in line with what we usually hear when we talk about paranormal investigation. Andrew, have you, in your 8 years of paranormal investigation, have you and your team come across situations where you would say, yes, there is a ghost or a spirit here? And how did you deal with that spirit?
Yes, we've came across a lot of situations. Anything that we've had it done, we've been touched and scratched, and there's nobody there. I've actually been bitten in the hand when there's nobody in the room. That was a frightening experience. Very frightening experience.
Very frightening experience. But. You know, one of the things that we hear a lot of paranormal investigators say is that, you know, once they encounter a real spirit, they attempt to help them move on.
Yes, that's correct, yes.
All right, so you get these guys out there fighting on the beach, you encounter them, they're spirits. And then, how do you help them move on?
It's not our job to move them on. We'd have to have a medium. There's a medium that would do that kind of job. don't know if a medium existing. So I say, this is the first time this has been done, so we'll just be able to document activity. And as Robert says, hopefully they can come back and do it all again.
All right, we have to step away for a break. We'll be back right after this break, so hang in there, folks. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guests this evening, Robert McDonald, Andrew Park, and David Park. Andrew and David are in Scotland, and Robert is in the Netherlands, and we are somewhere in the stratosphere here this evening, considering possibilities about this paranormal activity at the Normandy beaches. We have a flash message here from Vincent in the UK, and this is a pretty good question. Considering your discussion of possible timelines, what if the battle is real and you do something that merges timelines and plunges us back into World War II?
Well, I hope we win again. That's the only answer I can come up with. How about you, Alan? I'm Andrew.
Got me over that one. On you go, Robert.
Only on Kevin's show.
Well, I think what he's referring to here is, you know, we were talking about what if there is some technology running. Mm-hmm. Now, and plus I've talked about that, you know, their research into time travel. And so, you know, what if to buy time, they activated it and they keep going back, improving their ability to fend off the Normandy D-Day attack. So if they're doing that, they keep flipping the switch, they run it back, and they get better, and they get better, and they, what if, you know, they're replaying it themselves in order to get better at it. And then you flip the switch, it turns it off, and bang, the timelines merge.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. I, once again, only on your show. I mean, you come up with some of the, your audience comes up with some of the best questions on Earth.
Yeah, Vincent, thanks, by the way, for that flash message. Show. I'm sorry, what did you say, Robert?
I said, now I can understand why so many people want to support this show, and really should.
Yeah.
This is a great question.
Well, you know, we're willing here to consider possibilities that a lot of people would say, that's just nuts. Folks, it's not. You mentioned this earlier, Robert. We're sitting here right now using technology that is becoming obsolete quickly, and we take it for granted. We're using that technology to do this show, and we take it for granted. And yet when this show started back in 2000, none of that, this technology existed. The possibility that I could be hosting a show that can be heard around the world and at the same time seen around the world on our TV channel, that didn't even exist. That did not exist when we started this show.
That is correct.
And, you know, if back then, if I said, folks, tune in next week and we're going to have a TV channel going and you'll be able to watch, they would have said, you're nuts. But here we are. You know,
maybe in a Star Trek fantasy, yeah.
Yeah, correct. Here we
all
are.
All this was way back when.
And if I live long enough, we'll be broadcasting this show holographically.
Not far off now. That's not far off.
It's coming. And
now, somebody sent me a message while we were on the break, which I, one of my team members, which I really, really get a kick out of.
Yeah.
Some of the better ideas. You know, people were throwing out ideas. It's kind of cool. Hitler was very well known, him and his team, for scouring the earth for objects, for relics, for paranormal relics that had activity to them. Like, for example, the Holy Grail. He was heavy in search of that. What technology did he actually find? What secret artifact, for example, medieval artifact, or even from the ancient Roman days or way back when, what did he find? There's no record that he found anything that actually worked. But what did he actually find?
There is a story all over the internet right now about some missing U.S. servicemen who they're missing because they Vimana was discovered. And it's in a cave, and they went in to get it out, and it's a time well. They went in and vanished. Now, I mean, this is a fantastic story. It's a story that it may or may not be true. It's really, really, in my opinion, very, very iffy But what if?
Now, one thing that isn't iffy from the Hitler records, from what historians are recently uncovered, is several hundred mentions by the Nazi Party of the Gateway. This is after they left Africa. They kept mentioning the Gateway, and nobody ever understood what that reference was referring to.
Well, there you go. But what if he found one of these Vimanas, and it is one of these, what if that is sort of a time machine, dimensional transport? What if he found one? Because there's a story out there now that one has been found. So what if? What if he found
that
one?
That could be the Gateway, which Hitler mentioned several hundred times. That could be it. You never know what they're going to discover next. I mean, so many discoveries are coming out every day. You never know what we're going to discover in the bunker. Nobody's ever been to the bottom of bunker four, and this is really fascinating now to think about walking the stairway down to the very basement and seeing what's there.
Well, let me scare you a little bit. It may not. That may not be true. The idea that nobody's ever been to the bottom of Bunker 4, that may not be true. Maybe it is that no one who's been there has come back.
That's a possibility.
That's a good question.
Yeah. So, Andrew, are you going to the bottom of Bunker 4?
I'm not playing it.
I'm no.
We have some crazy Dutch guys. I think we'll send them in first. What do you think, Andrew?
Well, look, man, tie a rope around whoever goes in so you can pull them back out.
We'll try and get on film for you.
Yeah, we'll try to film it for you.
Yeah.
Andrew and Robert disappeared.
Yahoo.
Well, in reality, there's every possibility that nothing much will happen. I mean, that's a possibility, that nothing much will happen.
There is something, technology I'll be bringing from my ship, which I have the Facebook group, the Ghost Ship Hunters. I do have technology, modern technology I can bring with me, which is where everybody will have a GPS pinned to them, a tracker. And this will track everybody's movement wherever they walk. So if somebody goes missing, we'll still be able to track them, theoretically.
If they go missing, we'll post it back to you.
That's it. We'll let you know, Kevin. Live as it happens, we'll let you know.
Well, I'll tell you, my hat's off to you. I think this is really a very exciting, I would call this not an adventure, but an expedition. I think it's very, very exciting. I think it's very interesting. And we are hoping to be able to get live video back from the event. And Robert, you and I have talked about it. We'll talk about it some more. Andrew and Robert, we are just about out of time. And David, is David still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. I want to thank all three of you for being with me and for getting up so early to be with us on the show. It's been very interesting. And Robert, you too.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Kevin.
All three
of
you.
It's wonderful being here.
All three of you, stay on the line with me for a moment as I bring the show in for a landing. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is going to be one for the history books, regardless of what's found or not found, just the adventure of going and looking. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too. You may call me whatever you wish to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.